Somebody control Ian McClain. He's he is out of control today.
Totally.
Good morning. Good morning. Look at you. Now I'm just. I don't know if I don't
absolutely.
Know what, I don't know what's going on, Greg or Ian. But you are
great
in a
great church service this morning.
There you go. Very uplifting. No question about that. It's a great way to start the day. Welcome to Business to Business, powered by Good Morning. Powered by Allstream on 570 News. We are being produced, so to speak, by the lovely and talented Liz Russell, as always, keeping us. She's wondering what's going on with all this good morning stuff. You watch TV, right? You know what we're talking about. You know
they're misbehaving, Liz.
And back in the bowels of the building, web streaming us is Catherine Drake, and you can watch us on the web at 570news.com. We appreciate
Michael,
both of them.
You're on the web.
Our guest in studio today. Our guest in studio today. We rarely have in studio guests. Most of them we talk to over the telephone. Is Michael Harris? He is the Tory MPP for the riding of Kitchener-Conestoga. Great to have you, Michael.
Thanks for having me. Good
and
morning.
Over the next three shows, we're going to devote the bulk of the discussion to the forthcoming federal budget.
Provincial
budget, because well, there's a federal budget that will precede that, if I'm not mistaken. When is the provincial budget?
The provincial budget hasn't been called yet. I don't believe there's been a date called yet. But
the federal is looming within the next.
Well,
3 weeks
but
or
the
so.
Provincial one's going to be the one that's going to make or break the government of the day. I think so. That's why it's really important. I think quite frankly, the federal budget they can do what they want.
Michael knows he's a little shy right now.
Well, there's a good. That's a great way to start the discussion. Is the budget indeed going to use Greg's expression, make or break the government of the day? Could it be could it be defeated in the legislature?
Listen, right now, the federal budget will likely come prior to the provincial budget. Mm-hmm. There's rumors that the provincial budget might come down mid-April sometime with a vote followed in May. Listen, Ontario is faced with a crisis. We've got a financial crisis at Queen's Park, a $12 billion deficit, a $275 billion debt. A new premier, we need to get on track in terms of, getting our financial fiscal house in order, or the programs that Ontarians come to deserve and need won't be around if we don't get that fiscal house in order. So it will be a telling tale in terms of what direction this government will take. Will Premier Wynne adopt more of the same McGuinty agenda as we've seen over the last 10 years, or will they chart a new course? The last few weeks at Queen's Park, we've seen nothing but really the same.
We need some really big decisions made in this province. I believe we're at a crossroads. We're at a crossroads where if we don't make significant changes in how the government's operated, how it's funded, and where we're going as a province, we're going to be Greece.
Yeah,
we've
been talking about this for 6 months now about the fact we need to get on track. And I guess the reality is minority government in this environment is not helpful, because it's regardless of what the government is, it's very difficult to make some of the tough decisions that need to be made. But it's clearly this is going to be an important budget, and will really depend on whether the NDP support it.
You know what's really frustrating about it is that. I thought, quite frankly, I was very impressed with the fact that Dalton McGuinty went out, a long time ago and said to Don Drummond, who I respect immensely, because Don Drummond, what I know of Don is he's a straight shooter. He looks at it from a black and white perspective and says, this is what you got to do to get back on track. And he recommended, I think, 362 recommendations. And, quite frankly, I totally expected that the government of the day would say, well, here's the roadmap from the expert. This is what we have to do. And I am absolutely perplexed as to why this document hasn't been kept fresh. It's probably got an inch of dust on it now, and it's not being looked at, and it needs to be brought back out, and it needs to be the principal focus of where this government's going.
And to that point, Greg, the government of the day, Dalton McGuinty, took very few of those recommendations and actually acted on it.
I know.
You know what? This was a document that was supposed to bring us down, and create a for the budget last year. In essence, what they did do is they increased spending in 16 of the 24 ministries, and added almost $2 billion worth of new expenditures.
And so, yet when they tried to toe the line on wages for one particular group, and you know who I'm speaking of, all hell broke loose.
Yeah, now that was perhaps a politically motivated decision to win a by-election in a recent neighborhood of our own here. But it's funny because 2 weeks ago, our leader, Tim Hudak, and our caucus tabled a public sector wage freeze bill that would treat everyone equally or fair across the board, a two-year wage freeze or pause button on wages. As we had talked earlier, wages represent 50% of Ontario's expenditures. So
can't get there without dealing with public sector wages.
But that would apply to municipal folks, fire, police, even MPPs. And you know what? Unfortunately, the Liberals and the NDP voted against that bill. They voted against it. In fact, it did pass because the Conservative caucus of 36 were all out that day, voted for it, and the other two sides couldn't muster up enough votes to beat it. And so it'll go to committee, and it'll have a conversation that it needs. But again, Ontario needs to rein in its spending, and they've shown no willingness.
Michael,
to do
generally
so.
Speaking, do you think Mr. Hudak would have taken the Drummond report more seriously, or at least acceded to more of the recommendations?
Well, the report was, Don Drummond was Dalton McGuinty's hand-picked economist on it, but Don Drummond did bring up a lot of great aspects and how the government could reduce the overall size and its cost. And so, you know what, moving forward as we go into a possible election, we will be using a lot of the recommendations or basis of what he'd asked for in our policy documents moving forward. I think there's a lot of good ideas and a foundation to build upon some policy moving forward.
I think one of the comments that Don Drummond made was, here's the roadmap to get you your fiscal house back in order, to avoid what is the inevitable collapse of the province, for lack of a better words. And at the very end, he said, if you're not going to adopt all 362 of these recommendations, you have to substitute them with better ones, not new ones, not alternatives, better ideas. And I think they have.
But he was saying the whole package together. That was his thing, to really solve the problem. And this is why, when we talk about it, everyone says every election is important. But when he puts 362 recommendations together, he put them all together and said, here is, if you do them all, not just some of them, if you do them all, you can solve your fiscal crisis. And so what he was saying is, if you don't do all 362, you have to figure out a way to, if you're taking something else, what are you
but
adding
because,
back in?
Because those
recommendations. And that's the problem, is it's all 362.
Let me ask you this. We have a current politician, two formers. Because those recommendations did not come from the Minister of Finance, do you think there might have been a hesitancy to just fully embrace it?
There's the out. There's the out, right? Don Drama was hired as a consultant. Gives you advice. You take that
what
advice.
I mean, it's saving a little bit of face. In other words, if we exceed every single recommendation, the implication is we couldn't figure it out for ourselves. We had to turn to the private sector. Our own guy couldn't do it. You know where I'm going
with this. Well, yeah, I understand what you're saying. But oftentimes, it doesn't matter what world you live in, whether it's politics or your own business, it's a great idea to hire out and have that outside-looking-in concept or idea on where you should be going. I think it wasn't that no one had the ability there to do it. I think what it was taking that outside person and having them look at it from a higher level and saying, you know what, with fairness. And quite frankly, that was one of the recommendations or one of the demands that McGuinty put on Drummond. It's got to be fair. You got to make sure no new revenue, no new revenue ideas, but it's got to be fair on how we get our fiscal house in order.
Greg, to that point, though, there needs to be the political will to go ahead and implement it.
Well, that's the problem, isn't it, Michael?
In a time of a crisis, you can't sit there and dither. You need a strong plan and bold action. But
Drummond was also given the responsibility, and it bought them some time to say, well, we can't do anything right now. We've got to wait for the report. Well, then the report comes, and they didn't implement any of it, and we're getting deeper in the hole, not seeing. And I think the other thing, too, is, one of the realities is, in the past, you have a recession like we've had before, and you say you can grow your way out of a deficit. And what we know now in the U.S., in Europe, with everything slowing down, we cannot expect to say we're going to have 3 or 4 or 5% GDP growth, which will just the tax revenues will come in, and all of a sudden your problem solved. Not going to happen. And that's why reinventing government was a big part of what the Drummond report was. How do you do things differently to provide the services that people expect for an amount that the public treasury can support. And that's what was missing.
Right. I'm getting all fired up.
Then hold that thought. When we come back, we're going to talk about something that the chambers have put together called Emerging Stronger 2013. Four key messages, an economic agenda for Ontario developed by business, a leading think tank and a leading market research firm, and then some recommendations by the chamber. That's when we come back. You're listening to Business, powered by Allstream on 570 News.
I was just going to get in there.
Come on, Glenn. No, not that.
Who is that voice? Thank you. Thank you so much. Whoever you are. What a set of pipes, huh?
Lord.
Any young broadcasters listening? It's more than pipes, baby.
You gotta have a good hair.
You can have the greatest pipes in the world, but if you don't have good hair,
that's right. That's
you know, any young broadcasters listening, and you know, you don't have the greatest voice. Don't worry about it. It's what is going on between the ears. Forget about it. Don't try and sound like anybody else. Just talk your thing. Be your person. Find your inner you.
Fine.
Okay, we're getting off track here. We should do a whole show on, you know, the business of
radio
philosophy.
Yeah.
Oh,
that'd be a big
winner.
There's an oxymoron.
Well, yeah, we could dive into Glenn's whole.
I can already hear thousands of switches on radio.
How about this?
Open mic with Glenn.
The philosophy of business. Now you got something. We're celebrating a special occasion today, Ian.
Yeah. It's going to be a big reveal at the end of the show. Somebody that was at the Drayton Theater, at the Dunfield Theater for the inaugural showing of Mary Poppins, turned a big number. And we've got cupcakes to celebrate that my daughter's picked out at the grocery store. So we're not going to reveal that right now, but it is a big birthday for someone.
Speaking of that.
Yeah, because you threw me off. You said turned a big number. Yeah. I was hoping you would elaborate.
No, like, I'm not going to until the end. I'm going to
say someone's having a birthday.
Today.
Speaking about the Dunfield Theater and speaking about government and speaking about business, all three of us, Michael Harris, mm-hmm. Ian McLean, Greg DeRocher.
Hey, what about me?
Were you there?
No.
No. Okay.
You missed a great show.
Oh, my goodness. It was not, you know, the facility is awesome, outstanding, the technology that they brought in, but that show, I think, was second to none. I don't think I've ever seen any other production that, you know, really inspired me from the performance side that did.
And it was a 10-minute drive. I mean, yeah. Versus an hour to 2 hours.
It was
Toronto. Great.
Actually, it was about a minute and 45 seconds from my house.
Well, you know, the Drayton Theater is really remarkable. I mean, I think Dave Chilton, who did the introduction of Alex Moustakas, who's the artistic director, and I mean, the board, you're on the board, Greg. Yep. They do a fantastic job. They've got theaters in, what, Grand Bend, in Penetanguishene,
St. Jacobs,
mm-hmm. Cambridge.
They also have one in Drayton.
They do have one in Drayton. They've got, what, we got six theaters? I mean, seven. Seven theaters, and this new facility, 500 seats, and it's state-of-the-art.
Beautiful.
It really was very impressive.
For those that don't know, it's right downtown in the Galt area,
yep.
right? Yep. Grand Avenue?
Yeah.
Grand Avenue.
Grand Ave, yeah, right by Southworks Outlet Mall.
So tell me, okay, Mary Poppins, fairly simple story, but you were blown away by the way they approached it visually and technically.
Michael and I talked about it because, by the way, we were here before you and Ian were, so we had enough time to talk about it out of the back. But we both concluded that it was the technology that
you arrived
was brought
like 5 seconds before me.
was the technology that they're able to do in this beautiful new theater.
Yeah.
You know, with being able to move the scenery around while the show was actually going on. Wouldn't you say, Mike?
Yeah, much more than just a bunch of actors on stage, you know, with acting. There's so much more to it. The moving of the stage, the special effects, the sound.
The bands, the music, all
coming together, really.
And now that was opening night, right?
Yep.
That was opening night for the general public and some invitees.
Well, and it was interesting. There was obviously lots of speeches, but there's a lot of people that had a hand in making that happen, right? Mm-hmm. And Michael, you know a bit more about the infrastructure part, but we were just talking before we're going on air that getting a theater like that, which will serve the community in a lot of different ways, and you had some examples, some businesses that are already feeling the positive impact. But that theater is an amenity that Cambridge and the whole region
Greg, what does it mean to you? I mean, obviously to the region as a whole, it's going to bring tourism into the region generally. But what does it mean to Cambridge to have a world-class theater right in your downtown?
You know what's really interesting? And this whole show is built around the two chambers. And the Cambridge Chamber of Commerce, back 11 years ago, had a strategic committee developed just to talk about things we could do around tourism to attract people in. And live professional theater came out of that. And two individuals, Tiziana Fathers and Ken Wright, were on that strategic committee. And they took that project on themselves. They actually created a theater company within Cambridge, which was horrendously expensive for them. I think they lost thousands of dollars in doing that. But it really led to the conversation with Alex Moustakas and Drayton Entertainment that resulted in that theater. So the Chamber of Commerce is where the seeds all start for these things in our communities. And, you know, the KW just went through their big anniversary, and they talked about a number of the university. You know, those were things that are all seeds of the community that come out of the Chamber of Commerce, whether it's a committee on social infrastructure or tourism or business, it doesn't really matter. Those things all usually start from the Chamber of Commerce.
I think that's you can trace your roots back in Kitchener, Waterloo, Cambridge, all through the townships. Anything that's happened, whether it's cultural, the hospitals, the universities at Conestoga College have come through business saying a need.
Tech Park.
But talk a little bit about the how the partnership between the different players that, because this was a big build. I mean,
it was about 18 million. So there was a partnership, I believe, between the federal government, spearheaded by Gary Goodyear's discussion in conjunction with the local chamber and the municipality there. But additionally, the municipality chipped in six, the province chipped in six, and then the feds to round out 18 million. So now we've got, you know, an integral piece of infrastructure in our community, but operated now by the private sector, and those ideas that the private sector and the ingenuity that they bring will really ensure that, you know what, we've got that critical piece of infrastructure that will bring people from across Ontario and even North America, but not on the backs, really, of taxpayers.
And the operational piece. I think one of the things that I find interesting is a number of these shows will be playing at a number of the different theaters, right? So you're taking Mary Poppins will show at, I think, three of the different theaters. So you're taking it out right across southwestern Ontario, certainly the region. I think it's playing at St. Jacobs and Cambridge, but it's also going to Penetang and Grand Bend, maybe.
Many of the sets for all of the productions and all of the theaters will be built in the Cambridge facility. That's where they build them. They've got rehearsal studios in, I think there's three, maybe four rehearsal studios there on the Cambridge site that are exactly the same size as the stage.
And you know what's exciting about it? Where it's located. I'm a big fan of downtown Galt.
Yeah.
I think that it's an unappreciated local treasure. Mm-hmm. We talk a lot about St. Jacobs and Uptown Waterloo and the rejuvenated downtown core of KW or Kitchener. But downtown Galt is a gem and waiting to explode. There's a lot of exciting things going on.
Michael heard it from one of the entrepreneurs in downtown Cambridge, downtown Galt. Himself, who that was from the Cambridge Mill.
Yeah, the Cambridge Mill talked about how, you know, there's busloads coming in from across the province, you know, and they're working in conjunction with the Dunfield Theater to ensure that those folks are well fed, and what a beautiful facility that they have downtown and be able to experience an opera and see the community as it is. So a lot of partnerships and business opportunities coming out of the new theater.
All right, so positive reviews all around for the new Dunfield Theater.
Just one more thing. I think this is important because we've been talking about economic development. I mean, part of this, the importance of this is recruiting and retaining talent to our community from a business perspective. And this, the theater that happened, and I think what we're saying is it was world-class theater, not only the facility. Yeah. And I think Dave Chilton said it best as he was introducing Alex, saying Alex is known around the world as being the best, not just the best in Canada, but the best. And this is fantastic. Very affordable for families and a great asset for our community.
Right. When we come back, we're going to talk about an initiative by the Chamber, Emerging Stronger 2013, an economic agenda for the province developed by business, also a leading think tank and a leading market research firm. Our guest is Michael Harris. He is the Tory MP for Kitchener-Conestoga, and you are listening to Business to Business, powered by Allstream on 570 News. And welcome back to Business,
and
powered by Allstream.
Is the Senior Product Manager for Security Services with Allstream, Craig DeVoe. Gentlemen, take it away.
Craig, it's Craig DeRocher. Thanks very much for taking the time today to join us on the show. You've got some big shoes to fill because we've had some great experts coming on from Allstream. So it's once again a pleasure to have you.
And I'm looking forward to joining you today. Thanks for the opportunity to speak with you.
You know, Craig, in keeping with the theme of last month's show, where we talked about collaboration with Dax Nair, talk to us a little bit about distributed denial of service or DDoS attacks. More specifically, What is the DDoS service, and why should businesses be concerned?
Well, first of all, maybe I'll start with a definition of what a DDoS attack is. And very simply, it's an attempt to make a network resource or service unavailable for its intended users. And is what we see today, and actually in the news, you hear more and more about high-profile DDoS attacks. It's becoming more prevalent. So that's why, you know, it's on the radar screen of a lot of companies nowadays. And, you know, if you keep that into the within the context of collaboration and unified communications, as we move towards an IP-centric connectivity type of framework, which businesses now operate, obviously they're exposed to new internet-based threats, and DDoS represents one of the more recent and very effective attack vectors that are used against companies of all sizes.
Can you give me an example of a DDoS attack?
Sure. I mean, if you've been following the news recently, you've seen, or you've probably seen, that the banking industry in the United States has been under attack by Iran. So that's an example of a nation state targeting specific companies or organizations for maybe a political agenda. Another example, when we had the Occupy movement, you heard about Anonymous threatening to target financial institutions stock exchanges and organizations like that. So, I mean, those are more of the high-profile types of attacks. But DDoS can, like I said, you can attack companies of all sizes. It's a more of a horizontal type of threat. That's a risk to companies of all sizes across all industries.
We're on the line with Craig DeVoe. He is the senior product manager for security services with Allstream, and he's in conversation with Greg DeRocher, president and CEO of the Cambridge Chamber of Commerce, and Ian McLean, president and CEO of the Greater Kitchener-Waterloo Chamber of Commerce. Gentlemen.
Yeah, so this is really important for people to understand, because I think as we've heard in many of our shows and from some of your colleagues at Allstream, more and more of every business is reliant on e-commerce, if you will, of all descriptions. So how does a business be prepared for one of these distributed denial of service attacks or these DDoS attacks?
Well, I think one of the first steps that they have to do is really take a step back and realize that the threats have changed and they evolve over time, and they should really revisit, at least on an annual basis, their security policies and procedures and also their incident response plan, because, you know, these threats aren't static. They change over time, and you have to be able or be prepared to deal with new and emerging threats. So, I mean, that's more procedural, but there's also technology that you could potentially deploy to help protect your networks. Now, most customers, you know, they think of network security and they focus at the perimeter, and, you know, they would say, well, I have a firewall, or I might have an intrusion prevention appliance. And, you know, those are essential tools that are required as part of your security infrastructure, but they're not really designed to block DDoS attacks. Actually, DDoS attacks, in many cases, exploit the inherent weaknesses in those types of platforms, and sometimes those platforms become targeted themselves. So when you're looking for a solution, you should really focus, again, make sure you have the policies and procedures in place, that people are trained so that they can recognize a DDoS attack and they know how to respond. But also, you have to have the right technology deployed that's designed to deal with the core DDoS threat. And that's something that's really hard to do yourself, because even if you were able to deploy an appliance on your customer prem, DDoS, you have to think of it almost like an arms race. And the adversaries that are targeting you, they have virtually unlimited access to resources to attack you. So even if you were able to invest in new equipment and upgrade and expand your capacity over time, you'll never keep up with being able to stay ahead of your attacker. So the best thing to do is probably work with an upstream provider who's invested in this type of infrastructure that helps mitigate the DDoS attacks before they even touch your network.
Well, then, for more information on how to protect yourself from DDoS attacks or distributed denial of service attacks, call 1-855-299 7050 and contact a local sales representative at Allstream or go to allstream.com. Craig, thanks very much for joining us today. Great information, and hopefully people listening will take advantage and make sure they're protected from these attacks.
All right. Well, thanks for having me today.
Thanks again to Craig DeVoe of Allstream. We are really glad to have them on board as our main sponsor. You can check them out on the web at allstream.com. All right. The Ontario Chamber of Commerce has come forward with an initiative called Emerging Stronger 2013, an economic agenda for the province developed by business, a think tank, and a leading market research firm. They've come out with four key messages, Greg. Can you we want to commence the discussion on
yeah,
that?
Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, what's really interesting about this document, I think we can probably look back. The Ontario Chamber publishes these documents on a regular basis. But what was really interesting about this one was all three principal party leaders looked at this document, reviewed this document, came back and said, this is a great strategy and a great plan to get us back on track as a province. So, you know, not unlike the Drummond report that comes forward and says, here's the plan. There you go. You asked for it, and here's the fair assessment of where we go. Michael, You know when is government going to have the courage to do this, and would your leader have the courage to do this if he was premier?
Absolutely. Going back to Don Drummond, you know, he said that the cost of doing nothing would in essence be a $30 billion deficit come 2017-2018. Now, you know, we talk about billions of dollars here and there. It's important to note that, drill it down to a family, a household. We all know that we can't continue to spend more than we bring in each and every year, and that's simply what the province of Ontario is doing. This year's deficit's $12 billion. So they're spending $12 billion more than they're bringing in. Our leader, Tim Hudak, went around not only in Ontario but outside of Ontario asking those businesses, how do we get Ontario back on track? Number one thing they said is, balance your books, pay down your debt, just like we would do in our own households.
Absolutely.
And so, you know what, we've introduced ways about going doing that. We tabled the wage freeze bill last 2 weeks ago. It would save Ontarians $2 billion a year. It's fair, equitable, but if we don't address wages, we don't address the root problem of spending. Last year, I'd said the government increased spending in 16 of 24 ministries. You know what? They've got to get their fiscal house in order, because those things that we come to expect, need, and care about the most, those social programs, will have less and less down the road if we don't get that fiscal house in order. So we've brought forward a plan to do that. We've talked about business taxes because we need to incent the job creators to go out and hire people. Every percent of economic growth is about $800 million to the government in terms of revenue. And so we need to get Ontario working again, and those 600,000 folks that are out of a job, we need to get them back to work.
Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, some of these main themes in this report, and I encourage people to look at it. I think it is a pretty good high-level framework, but having private and not-for-profit sectors play a bigger role in delivering public services, fostering entrepreneurship in the classroom, reinventing employment and training services, Ontario needing an export strategy or export growth strategy for SMEs, and looking at different objectives and policies to revitalize manufacturing. Those are high level goals, but they're also going to require some really tough decisions, because you can't do it alone by just freezing wages. You've also got to manage down healthcare and education
very quickly. And before we get into this, you recommended people have a look at it. They can do that on the web at occ.on.ca. That's www.occ.on.ca.
Yeah, I think, and it's worth reading. But I mean, how do you put it together? Because I mean, it's not just the wage part; it's a complicated thing. How do you put all the pieces together?
A government needs to look at the businesses that they're in and what services that they deliver and what aspects of the service delivery can the private sector look at. We talked about Service Ontario afterwards, you know, delivering core services to Ontarians, but allowing the private sector to deliver that. That's where you're going to get that innovation, the ingenuity. You know what, lowering costs while increasing competition. I mean, competition is good. Government's having a monopoly on things. I mean, if there was only one coffee shop in town, there may not be that great service that we come to expect. But because
we know there wouldn't be if it was government run.
So we have to evaluate what the role government should be in terms of, we talked about the LCBO. We talked about the OLG. recently. Healthcare, a numerous amount of government funds goes into delivery of healthcare services. We need to take a good look at that and ensure that government is working best for its people and delivering those critical services.
Hey, guys, hold that right there. We're gonna come back with more as Business to Business continues, powered by Allstream on 570 News.
Hey, do you?
Welcome back to Business to Business. This segment of Business to Business brought to you by Save On Energy, offered by your local electric utilities. We're in discussion with Michael Harris. He is the Tory MPP for Kitchener-Conestoga, talking about an initiative created by the Ontario Chamber of Commerce, Emerging Stronger 2013, some recommendations for private industry, for government. And we're just discussing some of those recommendations. And let's pick up where we last left off. You were highlighting some of them, Ian.
Yeah, and I mean, I think one of the things I'd like to get your take on, Michael, is you've got some additional responsibilities in Queen's Park as environment critic for the Tories, and you've got done some local things in terms of waste diversion locally and a variety of other things. How do you marry those responsibilities of the local constituency and your specific critic's role to sort of the economic theme that you've been talking about, which is deficit, and delivery of public services?
Yeah, I think it's first off important to note that before I was elected, I came from the private sector, business development for Honeywell. And I always felt that, government needs more business-minded folks at the table. We go to work each and every day. We're measured by our results. We're held accountable for the decisions that we make. Once elected, I was given the responsibility as an environment critic. And one of the first things that I tackled as critic was looking at our dismal waste diversion record. Here in Ontario, it's about 23% of the waste is diverted. So there's an enormous opportunity there. In fact, we ship about a third of our waste to the United States. And so we've rolled out a plan on engaging the private sector on, how do we take, those waste streams? You look at some of the new innovative ways where we're using plastics and developing and manufacturing new products and, the way we go about, recycling electronics, et cetera. So that's something that I've worked on as an environment critic. Locally, I've had a great opportunity and honor, obviously, to serve my community as in Kitchener-Conestoga. One of the first pieces of legislation that I brought forward, and it actually passed second reading, was the Transparency in Government Bills Act. And so a main part of that bill was to get government, when introducing new pieces of legislation, to perform a cost-benefit analysis. We do those in our own homes, whether we're buying a TV, trying to sell it to our spouse, or in our own businesses when going about making a major decision on hiring people or building on, expanding. A cost-benefit analysis is done. And so government should be doing the same thing and ensuring that the public, both in the municipalities, the taxpayers, businesses, farmers, you name it, know the costs of such government legislation. So that's something that I was proud to have tabled, and it did pass second reading, unfortunately, with prorogation. It died on the order paper, and so we'll revisit that when we come back. I've had an enormous and a tremendous honor and opportunity to serve my community as we go forward. But again, I think the real challenges faced to Ontarians, not only just the folks in my riding of Kitchener-Conestoga, businesses here in our region, but Ontario in general, is to get Ontario's fiscal house in order. We all have to live within our means in our own homes. Government should be no different. If debt were in fact a ministry, health and education are the first two biggest ones. Debt would come number three.
Yeah, that's the scary part.
We pay annually $11 billion to service that debt, roughly $275 billion. That's an enormous amount of money. I mean, could you think about the opportunity or the potential for infrastructure here in Ontario? It's social programs, healthcare, education, what we could do with $11 billion. So we need to have a plan. We have to change course. Our party has outlined our ways about going to do that when we call for a wage restraint. Reducing the overall size and cost of government, analyzing what businesses the government should and shouldn't be in. So we can get Ontario back on track and the leader that it once was.
This is Business to Business, powered by Allstream on 570 News. You can follow us on the web. We are web-streamed each and every Sunday at 570news.com. Our web-stream producer is Catherine Drake. And back to you, gentlemen.
You know, Michael, you and I talked about it earlier. This is, you know, I guess from my perspective, I sit back here, maybe I'm getting a little bit cynical as I go along, but this is simple, because if I'm spending, my family's spending more money than is coming into our household every year, then I have no choice but to make a decision. And you know what? I'm not going to like any of them. My wife's not going to like any of them. My kids aren't going to like any of them. But you know what? It's pretty simple that I have to make some tough choices.
But you know what, Greg? We've been hearing about it lately from Mark Carney. Being in debt and living beyond our means is not unique to government. I mean,
well,
you could arguably say that government's boring from
I absolutely recognize that.
We're all living beyond
our means. But the same pressures aren't on government that they are on me. Because if I can't pay my mortgage, then I'm going to lose my house.
This is how we have bubbles in the U.S., where people just have to walk away from their homes because they can't afford to pay for it. And government doesn't have the same issue. Government just keeps borrowing more. And I guess that's...
And, you know, there seems to be no courage, Michael. That's the problem. There's no courage to make these tough decisions. I know not everybody's going to agree on everything, but you know what? And even some things you may not agree with, but they have to be done. We have no choice.
A government's spending and putting new programs on the credit card. They're financing our future to simply provide the necessities of today. So tough decisions will have to be made. It's not going to be easy, but it has to be done.
Well, I think this is one of the things is, you know, you can look at this. The federal Mulroney years where they had difficult decisions. So it's a track record of showing that courage and doing the right thing is not particularly a strong one at any level of government. But, you know, we don't have any choice at this point. No. We're at one of those critical junctures.
You look at, you know what, downgrading of our, you know, the downgrades. For every percent.
The financial rating.
You know what, it's to interest rates would add about $500 million. In those payments. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, government has to, again, reduce its deficit, yep. pay down that debt, and get its fiscal house in order. But we have to take a good look, not always looking for new streams of revenue, but look at, you know, reducing the overall size
and
cost of
government. You know, time has just flown by. We should have Michael back again.
Absolutely.
We should.
Maybe you should be one. Oh, we can't. You know, you'd have to quit. But
And to be fair, when I say that, you know, equal time to Ms. Fife and yep, to yep. Mr. Leone and yep. to Mr. Malloy.
Well, Mr. Leone was...
And,
you know,
Mr. Malloy, equal time. But, I mean, we're just touching the iceberg, the tip of the iceberg, as they say. Okay, a couple of minutes to go. Ian, this is a special day.
Yes, this is a very special day. And I know Greg...
No, it's not a special
day. Greg's turning gray. And for our web viewers over here, these lovely cupcakes were
selected. How did we get 65 candles?
Wait a minute. I said this.
Wait a minute.
It's Greg
DeRocher's.
There's five. One for Catherine and Liz, Greg, Glenn, and Michael. And these are from Hannah and Abigail. They picked them out. These are Greg's favorite colors, pink with a red cherry on top. So you guys can pass those
Greg,
around.
I didn't know pink was your favorite color.
And but Greg is turning, I think, 37 today.
Yes, 37.
Plus 20. Yeah. But and so we want to wish Greg a very happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Greg.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
And we've got some great stuff coming up that Greg and I are working on, our leadercast on May the 10th. Some great speakers, Condoleezza Rice, Mike Krzyzewski, Jack Welch. So I encourage anyone,
Go to our website.
Go to the website.
Yeah. Leadercast, in short, is a conference where you can sit down.
Leadership.
And via satellite, listen to world-renowned speakers.
And we actually, I think Ian and I were really busy that day with our own business, but... We spent a ton of time there because we were having a great time, and it was fantastic information. It's worth it.
Lawyers, accountants, HR professionals, you get credits, professional credits, but just for a small business owner, leadership development, team development.
So it's greaterkwchamber.com, cambridgechamber.com. Thank you so much to our guest, Michael Harris.
Thanks for having me.
Kitchener Conestoga, Tory MPP. And to Ian and Greg, thank you again. What a great show. Happy birthday, Greg. You've been listening to Business, powered by Allstream, produced by the one and only Liz Russell and Catherine Drake. Have a great day. Thanks for listening.